Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and the people that know me well know my passion is all about golf and creating experiences around golf through the Fireside Chat Kindling podcast. And so today I am super stoked to be bringing in Aaron Waltz, and the main message that we're going to be conveying to you is that we're going to be talking about doing high-end golf simulation. Doing it right is hard, but that's what we lean into on The Art of Construction. And we have a pro that has been doing this for a while and knows the ins and outs of golf simulators and tying that into construction. And how this is going to benefit you is that Aaron has really, he's been in the game of golf and knows the name of golf, and he knows how simulators fit into your construction project. Man, when I, on our pre-interviews, it's like this guy has wrote the book when it comes to this stuff, literally. And so we're going to be talking through, you know, how to properly do this right, and he's lived it, right? And so talking through the in and out of COVID, how things changed, and figuring out and talking through, you know, what is the right quote-unquote dollar per square foot for luxury amenities when it comes to this theater plus golf simulators and all these different things, where it's, at this point, it's cheap to put a TV and there's a lot of knockoffs out there, but we're going to talk about how to do this right. And so without further ado, let's go in and get to know Aaron's story and have as much fun as possible. Aaron, what's your favorite beverage?
Ooh, favorite beverage these days. If I'm on the boat, it's got to be something cold. So usually some type of an IPA beer, but if I'm sitting back and relaxing, I like whiskey and I like tequila.
Nice. What's a whiskey that comes to mind that you've recently had?
Well, I've got friends that are in the expensive whiskey business, so I just go over to their bars and they give me a full backstory on all the different, you know, where this one is, where that one is. But I fell in love with single malt whiskeys. I've had an opportunity to go to Scotland 8 times, and they specialize in single malt whiskey. So it's usually, if it's a single malt, it's pretty fun.
Awesome. Well, the juices are flowing here, and I'm excited for this conversation. Well, you just said all the trips to Scotland, and you and I were talking about that on our pre-interviews of all the different places golf has carried us. But what is your favorite place that you've traveled?
You know, it's hard to beat Scotland or the Monterey Peninsula. So those are the two best golf locations in the world. So I had a chance to play Cypress Point. Gosh, it's probably been 11 years ago now. Played Cypress Point right before the new year, and it was just one of the greatest golf experiences of my life, finishing those holes right on the ocean. And then if you get a chance to play the old course at St. Andrews, walking in on 18, and you've got just townspeople and golf enthusiasts cheering for you as you're hitting your shots and rolling out that last putt is pretty special.
Oh man, you got me there for sure. As Scotland, where a good buddy, Troy Meyer, got married and playing Royal Dornoch, that's where I really fell in love with the golf experience. And that's what we're going to talk about today, of how do we tie that into your construction project. But what else do you like to do other than golf? What is your other hobbies or interest outside the construction silos we're going to break down that we passionately call the art of construction?
Well, I've got 2 teenage daughters highly involved in competitive sports. So I feel like I'm the super travel sports dad. So we're not doing travel and sports. We're on the lake, you know, in the summertime. We're on the lake enjoying the warm weather, whether we're floating or pulling tubes, doing fun stuff like that. Sunset cruises, it's pretty hard to beat and great way to wind down.
Awesome. What part of the country are you at doing that?
In West Michigan, I'm about an hour north of Grand Rapids, and I live in a nice little lake community called Canadian Lakes. My lake house is right outside the entrance of Tullymore Resort.
Awesome.
Beautiful golf community.
Well, I'm excited to hear your story, Aaron. What is your story that led you to being the VP of sales at Unicor?
Well, if you rewind the clock, I got into golf at 13, caddying at Little Monroe Golf and Country Club, and I knew at 13 years old I was going to be a golf pro and I wanted to work in the golf business. So Michigan, I was fortunate. Ferris State had the biggest PGA program in the U.S., so I went through the PGA program at Ferris State, did some outstanding internships at like the Inverness Club in Toledo, some big resorts, and that jump-started my career. First job out of college was at Oakland Hills, so I worked the Ryder Cup, the U.S. Amateur, PGA Championship, and being at a top 10 club, you got really involved with high level technology as a young assistant. So I started teaching and fitting using golf launch monitors back in the day, different than what we have in the modern era, but the best at the time to fit, teach, and coach. And then that led into, as I moved into my own, you know, professional career, being a head professional at different facilities, buying into technology, and then eventually ending back up at Ferris State University, running the PGA program. And we have terrible winters up in Michigan. So when I started up there in 2010, one of my first initiatives was to build a state-of-the-art learning center for the students where they could train and perform with the best technology in the world and work on their golf games. So I kind of, you know, got into the golf technology side of things initially from teaching, coaching, club fitting, but then was a little bit ahead of the game as an opportunity for the students to train and perform and work on their golf game in the virtual golf world. And after 10 years at Ferris, I then moved on to work with TrackMan. So one of the big names in the industry, doing custom installations with them, taking over the range division for the U.S. And then a few years after working with TrackMan, a nice little company called the Unicor knocked on my door and I had an opportunity to come over to their launch monitor company and really help transform them into a simulator company and start doing things like we're going to discuss today, which is that high-end residential custom, commercial custom installation. And how do we guide people through the process the correct way? Because there's a lot of people doing simulation the wrong way, but how do we get them to build their dream simulator the correct way? So I've kind of a little bit different, non-traditional PGA professional career, started in the green grass industry and then moved into golf technology.
Awesome. Well, let's start unpacking that. And I want to start off by, you know, what are the key factors when installing a simulator in a construction project? I've had the luxury of being involved in many really cool high-end construction projects. And so many times when you hear downstream, it's like the sizing this, it doesn't really work, mm-hmm. resetting it and all those things. But before we get into what makes Unicor separate, let's first just talk, you know, Golf Simulators 101. Can you walk through the key factors of and guide the listeners or the builders and affiliates making these construction projects happen? So can you walk us through that and then we'll unpack from there?
Yeah, absolutely. So step number one is space. You know, you don't want to swing a golf club in a small space. So the space needs to be large enough and safe enough. And then based on space, what else do we want to do with it? So if I was a builder and I was building luxury spec homes, you know, I wanted to put a golf simulator in a portion of the home. Absolutely. So minimum width is usually 15 feet wide. We want 10 feet of height and at least 20 feet of depth. But if I wanted to be a home theater space and a golf simulator, well, I need better space for stadium seating. So now all of a sudden my room's probably going to be 25 feet, 20 to 38 feet deep. And if I want a true 16x9 image throw, I'm probably going to try and get my room as wide as 18 feet. So if we look at the generic parameters, we want a 15 to 18 foot wide room, 10 feet high, and between 20 and 30 feet of depth, depending upon how much you want to utilize the space for things outside of golf.
Awesome. So you get the right space, and this is the finished space, right? I hear so many times this gets, you know, buried in the basement someplace, and then you add the foundation walls, and you add, and then you have problems, right? I've experienced that many times. Yeah. Is that something you'd chime in on as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can't tell you how many either high wealth individuals or retired professional athletes build their dream home and then ends up being wrong. So a former University of Michigan player that played, I think he had 12 years in the NFL, huge dude. And he built his dream home in the suburbs of Metro Detroit. And he wanted his golf simulator room to be big. Well, again, the raw specs, everything looked terrific. Fast forward the clock, the heat runs, the air returns. He ended up having all these soffits all over his lower level, which made the ceiling so much lower than he wanted. And that was his number one requirement of his new build, that he didn't want any of the ceilings to feel low, because his entire life, everything looked small to him. And he finally was going to build a house with big space. And unfortunately, they, you know, the HVAC crew came in and, I don't say messed up his space, but really tarnished part of his dream home and what he really wanted.
What else when it comes to planning out a golf simulator? So if you get the space all right, and remember, all these other stuff are going to shrink it for the finished space, right? So that's the part you're talking about, is this is the finished footprint, and you got to add on whatever. And that's what we talk about every day on The Art of Construction, is like, how do you get all those things you mentioned, and then understanding how you pack out a space to get that finished space. So that's the finished space. What else I'm sure having the right electrical in the right place, lighting, so on and so forth.
Correct. And then we call that our pre-installed deliverables. So when you're going to install a golf simulator, you're going to have mechanicals in the ceiling that are required. You need power for your launch monitor and a conduit run to go back to your PC station. You need power for your projector and a conduit run to go back to your PC station. If you're going to do any type of specialty lighting in the ceiling. So some people are hardcore about performance training. Then you probably want some specialty lights for the ceiling, some directional spotlights that are on, you know, additional switches and dimmers. So when you're doing some performance training, you have that in there properly. Commercial code is an issue in different parts of the country, even residential. So if you have to have overhead sprinklers in your space, where do those need to be? So obviously, if you're hitting a golf ball indoors, you don't want a sprinkler head anywhere within the hitting zone or the strike area. So sometimes you need to be a little bit creative. Do they need to be wall-mounted sprinklers? Do they need to be on the far side of a ceiling protection? What type of cages go on top of those? There's a lot of those little things that are really important. Back to the PC station, you know, where do you want your command center to be in your space? And if you're going to have a command center, is there going to be some custom cabinetry, which is very common, or people want to put a refrigerator in. And before you know it, if you have a 15-foot wide space and you put in a nice cabinet with a refrigerator for some drinks and a bar top, well, you just took a portion of that room and now narrowed it to 13 feet of width because you just put a 2-foot cabinet in. So it's very important that as we look at the design layout, it's no different than putting in a luxury kitchen. You know, your luxury kitchen requires a lot of planning on where your cabinetry is going to be, your vent, your type of appliances. And if that's not spaced out properly, you're really going to have an inefficient kitchen that's functional. And then also it's a showpiece for the home. People are going to walk in, they're going to see it's too crammed or the layout doesn't work out well. The same thing with your golf simulator space. If you try to put too much into that room, it's going to look really bad and crammed. Where if you have a tighter space, then we go through the planning process and we have to take elements out to make sure it's functional
Perfectly said. I can't tell you how many you go to these wonderful restaurant golf simulators and it's like, it seems like almost every time the cabinet, the restaurant people are not talking to the golf simulator people. And what a shame, because then you're like, you're so crammed on your backswing with that counter behind there or whatever for all the things you're talking about. And it's such a shame because it just takes away from the experience. And that's what I was really excited about having you on here to like talk through. What are the must-haves to have a luxury golf experience? Because the people that really are passionate about golf and doing it well, they want it to be like being out on the golf course, right? And it takes a lot to do that. Also, I think a big part I'd love for you to touch on is, you know, the hitting surfaces and packing out, you know, what you're standing on and how that space works to make it as real, quote unquote, as you can.
Absolutely. And then it's funny. There's a coin phrase, or they call it like an indoor golf swing syndrome. Like, people are afraid to swing a golf club indoors. Mm-hmm. So you'll hear it all the time where, you know, or I'll hear it from a client like, oh, my ball doesn't go as far as I do outside. Or of course, everybody hits the golf ball 300 yards, which they don't. But, you know, it's their story, their fairy tale. So whatever, yeah. You hit it 300 yards. Sure you do. You know, as long as you have a Venmo account, we'll go play golf later and we'll see how far you hit the golf ball. Right. So, but you know, so the last thing you want to do in your space is make it feel smaller or cramped in. So if people that are pressing the ceiling height, you know, I'll get people, whether it's residential, commercial, come in with 9 feet, 3 inches. What do you think? I said, well, I can swing a golf club in that space. Most people are not going to feel comfortable swinging in that space. So you could try and do, whether it's at your house or in a commercial environment, try to create this nice atmosphere, but it's not inviting. People aren't going to come back. So you want that repeat customer. So even people that go to a Topgolf that are scared of heights, they go back, you know, because they feel safe. They can swing a golf club there. They may not want to go on the top floor. They may prefer one of the lower floors, but it feels really open because of the way the setting is. You don't have that opportunity indoors. So some of it maybe is just, what colors are you going to choose? You're always hitting usually into a dark environment, but why not bring in some better colors around the outside of the sim? So for us, we generally hit into an 8 foot, into an 8 foot simulator bay. So whether it's a custom sim with custom textiles or one of our commercial cages, something like that, you're hitting into an 8 foot cage. So everything from that 8 foot and out portion, you want to do everything possible to make that feel as big as you can. So using the right colors, working with your team that if you're building a luxury home, you know, what color palette do we have in the house? How do we transfer that into the golf simulator space to make it feel big and inviting? And in a perfect world, we always want to try to get to that 18 feet of width. And it's okay if the room kind of chops up a little bit as you go deeper. Some people are a little skittish about that, or if we're working in a basement, there's different foundations and posts. That's okay. We can work around some of those features as long as we get that core portion of the simulator bay that you're hitting into. It's okay if the room opens up a little bit off to the right side, and that's a better spot for a bar top and seating, additional televisions. But the main area where you're hitting golf balls, you've got plenty of space to swing the golf club, grab your clubs, use your technology suite with your different touch screens, and have a great experience.
Awesome. Any other golf simulator 101 things that we must point out to the listening audience?
Yeah, the other big thing is everyone wants to talk about 4K or HD. Most simulator bays that you look at are not wide enough for a 16:9 image throw. So they end up with a 16:10 image or a 4:3 image. So when you're really looking for that, let's call it 4K or HD experience for virtual golf, and then also streaming and television, you want to have that room wide enough to give yourself a 16:9 image within the space. And that's what everyone's pushing towards these days. Most everyone wants that 4K quality in their golf simulator.
Awesome. Well, we've highlighted a few of the important things. Now let's start diving into your experience from being an early adopter of setting up, you know, from the very beginning to the most recognized brand in the industry of TrackMan to now Unicore. What makes Unicore different than other golf simulators, and why, what made you represent that brand?
Sure. Well, you know, Unicore has only been in the U.S. market for about 6 years. Internationally, 18, 19 years under the QED brand. So they've been doing indoor golf for a long time. And they capture the golf ball and the club data a little bit different than we did when I was with TrackMan, where TrackMan was using military-grade radars to track the golf ball and the club. And initially, they were an outdoor company tracking golf balls from start to finish. You know, Justin Johnson made the company really famous, bringing that first TrackMan on tour to the practice rounds and tournament days. But he was hitting the golf ball so far, he always wanted to know exactly where the ball was landing. And that technology did that. As indoor golf became very popular, they reverse engineered that technology to allow that TrackMan 4 to really capture that golf ball, with about 9 or 10 feet of ball flight, and then reverse engineer that data to create a virtual golf experience, which was pretty exciting. And with that, there was always, you know, just a few different things that were not necessarily quirky, but just different, because again, they took an outdoor device and moved it to indoors. And they've since added another device that's indoor only. Unicor has always been an indoor company. So when they capture the data, they use a patented process called dimple optics. So the cameras and the infrareds lock into the pattern of any golf ball. And then at the moment of impact, it then captures perfect revolutions of that golf ball for the first, you know, 12 to 18 inches, which gives us all the data that we need to accurately depict what the golf ball is going to do, whether it's in a driving range setting or in virtual golf. So it's pretty outstanding. So you get your velocity, all the rotations of the ball, which is important, not just the backspin, but also the spin axis, your clubhead speed. We get our angle of attack, and then we use some other different technology to capture the clubhead. So, and it's instant. So it's a very fast system that at the moment of impact, as soon as you hit the ball, it's already happened on the screen. All the data tiles pop onto the screen for you instantly, which is really exciting. So it's a little bit different, you know, on how we get to our numbers versus TrackMan or even Foresight or some of the other competitors. Everyone does things a little bit different, but it's really fast and exciting. Moving to Unicor was an awesome opportunity. When I came to Unicor, they were a launch monitor company. They were pretty much just selling launch monitors, and I came in and brought more of this simulation experience for the company. So for our residential, some of our residential customers that are more budget conscious, we do simple DIY kits. But to add in the custom installation and the custom design process, and for me to not say no to a lot of things that the customers have been asking me for years, which was different color textiles. Not everyone wants a black simulator wall. They want a color palette that's going to match what their space looks like. So when we did Trine University in Angola, Indiana, they're a Division III school. We did their NCAA blue for their sidewalls. So they have a beautiful two-bay setup with their NCAA blue on their left and right wall. And then we did a divider curtain in between the bays. So they could, if they wanted to, their players can roll putts, you know, as long as 20 to 65 feet within their training room, but then pull the curtain back and they have two bays that are extremely safe for them to train and perform. So the opportunity to come to a company and add additional customization, I don't like saying no to customers and their dreams. So once we find out their dream, let's make your dream space come true within reason. And then we're very competitively priced. So where we come into with some of our higher end finishes, we're still at a very competitive price where our competitors start.
All right. Thanks for that explanation on, I love how, you know, sometimes what's the most recognized doesn't mean it's not a great product, but I loved your story about how TrackMan started outside and went inside. You know, one of the passion projects I'm working on is hitting inside to outside, and we're working on this shooting range club for shooting guns on one side and golf balls out the other. And I was at the Masters a couple years ago, and it was this whole thing about Jordan's new club of like the range where every room has a door to open up and you hit out in the driving range, and just it's this nonstop like creation of how you adjust the golf experience, right? But before all of that, you had said at the beginning, you talked about how, let's put the money then if you say you hit it this far when I've seen you on the simulator, because actions speak louder than words. And I raise my hand and say, like, if you're going to really commit to excellence in golf, like, you better be paying attention to this stuff nowadays, because I think about, I was researching how this guy on the Korn Ferry Tour came out of nowhere and jumped the lid, and he was like, well, I'm a video gamer and I built the courses that you couldn't get on the video games and the track. And I was like, just fascinated by the whole, like how to move forward. Right. And so for me, it's just like on the off season, I just pretended, but I took the time to like go in and like have the screen and the monitor tell you how you hit the golf ball, to then have a coach augment and put that stuff together. But I'm super intrigued your take of like how this evolves, because it's been a few years since I've done it personally, but I can't help but bring up how to integrate AI and all this stuff of like, in the past, it's like, okay, here's how you reference Dustin Johnson or this person hits, this is what they look like and what you look like. But I'm assuming nowadays you could put a lot of stuff together to really say, like, what is your goal? And for me, it's to get to a 10 handicap. And Aaron, you looked at my gin on the pre-interview and just said, well, you need to just learn how to putt and get your short game right. And you're right. So I'll stop the tangent there of teeing this up to just say, like, what's your take on technology? And we'll do this again at the closeout of, like, how to integrate AI and all this stuff and what you guys are doing around that.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest thing is, if you're trying to get better at golf, if you're practicing, you're playing, or if you're teaching golf and you're not using technology at the highest level, you're really doing your students a disservice, or you as a player trying to get better, you're doing yourself as a disservice. And it's not the, you know, it's not the Vijay Singh system anymore, where he's hitting, you know, 1,000, 2,000 golf balls a day and he's on the range for 5-6 hours. There's no reason to put your body through that torture. I mean, you can go through and you need to be as efficient as possible. So for a beginning golfer, you know, like our system, for example, we've got these beautiful impact videos and photos. So as a beginning golfer, if I'm just trying to hit 20-yard shots and I can't hit the center of the club, what am I really doing? Because at that point, I can swing as hard as I want. I can do all these other factors. But if I can't hit the center of the club, I'm never going to get the performance out of the golf swing or the ball that I want. The same thing as I move forward as a 18 handicapper to 15 handicapper. There's a lot to be said that if you're not hitting the center of that golf ball, you're never going to be successful. We talk about
ball
gambling on the golf course,
right?
it's everything. Well, part, you know, I hate giving strokes. Like all my buddies I gamble with at the golf course, I always have to give them a, you know, I'm giving them a shot on the eighth hole at Tullymore. It's a par five. And it's a 3-shot hole for them. If I hit a rip drive, I can hit my second shot over a pine tree, over swamp, onto the green. And the problem is I've got 3 buddies that are below 10s. Well, they can hit 3 good shots in a row. A 12 to 18 handicapper statistically does not hit 3 good shots in a row. So, and that's what it comes down to. They don't hit the sweet spot. They cannot hit the sweet spot of a golf club 3 times in a row. And when you're coming back into technology, like when I'm giving a golf lesson now, if I'm helping somebody, I can get 15-minute golf lessons all day long because I can see exactly what the problem is. I can show them what the problem is. And that's all we really need to work on. And sometimes it's balance. Sometimes it's, there's other factors involved in making a good golf swing and making solid contact. But that's what we're really trying to accomplish. At the end of the day, we're trying to get a golfer to hit the center of the golf club at the correct attack angle with the most velocity. And that's done a number of ways. But back to AI and video analysis, the technology's there. We have the technology. We have the cameras that do the AI body analysis for you and show you what your body looks like. You know, when I started giving golf instruction and using, you know, V1, and I had to tell a straight by hand on every golf swing and compare them to a, you know, a tour player and sync in 2 different cameras. It was so time consuming just to illustrate what is now done automatically. And this gives feedback so you can be so much more efficient. And then the golfer knows exactly what they want to practice. So they can practice on technology instead of getting a 30-minute or a 1-hour golf lesson. And then they go out and try and practice and they're still guessing. Am I practicing the right thing? Am I in the right positions? Those days are over. I mean, the technology is there for you to train and practice with proper feedback.
On the pre-interviews, we were talking through, like, where I have a few buddies putting them in, and we had talked the story of, like, well, they want one that can, you know, the kids can play soccer and it can do this and it can do that, of like all these different. And then, you know, I'm just going to kind of buy this equipment and do it myself. What's your take on now of the DIYer, which there's nothing wrong with that, but like, how can you, we're talking about commitment to excellence of doing all of this, like creating the pro experience. Can you create a pro golf experience and do all these other things with the simulator? What are the buyer bewares to that?
Yeah, so I think you got to be careful with certain setups. So in essence, a lot of it is you get what you pay for, right? So if you're not really sure if you're going to want to get a, you know, am I going to use this golf simulator or not, right? Do I want to jump into the Peloton world? Am I going to use this bike or treadmill? I'm not really sure. Some people take that approach with their first golf simulator setup. They don't really know what they want. So they'll buy a lower dollar launch monitor, maybe a simulator kit, and they're not going to get a great experience. But for some people, it's enough for them to say, okay, this is cool. I'm going to do it. Let's go to the next level. But in general, you get what you pay for. It's not that great. When you're trying to put in a higher quality system, I always ask people, like, you know, should I install this myself or pay a professional? And I ask them a simple question. Do you even change your own oil? Can you change your brakes on your car? And usually the answer is no and no. Then why would you make an investment on a luxury golf simulator and then try and put it together yourself and it's not set up correctly and you're not getting the experience that you want? Because at the end of the day, if you put in a golf simulator, I'm going to assume you want a quality experience. You want to be able to play virtual golf and it's as close to real life as possible. You want the ball to be, you know, I don't want to have to put a golf ball in place three times. I hit a shot three times, I didn't pick it up either time. I want the image to fill the screen properly. I don't want the screen wrinkly, or I don't want the screen so tight that the ball shoots back at me. It's really unsafe. There's so many variables that come into play. Even the turf, you know, did we put the turf in properly? Did I select the correct hitting mat to hit off of? You touched on that really early at the start of the interview. What type of surface am I hitting off of? I don't want it to, you know, hurt my wrists or hands. Can I tee up a ball in that surface? There's a lot of these variables that come into play that are really important that the DIYer, they may figure it out. And for their first time, it might be, if we were going to grade them out of a, you know, a traditional grading scale, they'll probably do a C+ job at best. And that's it, because they're not going to do another one again until, what, 10 years, and they decide to upgrade one when you have professionals that install simulators every week that just do a fantastic job.
Well job pointing that out. And then the question is okay, the contractor that's listening to this, they just want that. What's the budget line item? And this is the impossible world of day-to-day. They'll say, well, how much for these windows and doors? Well, it's kind of like your golf simulator. There's so many variables about how you're going to use the space and sunlighting and shading and types of materials. But could you kind of help us, you know, a dollar per square foot for quote unquote luxury amenities when it comes to, you know, doing it the right way to have a badass golf simulator? Let's take out all the other extras of theaters and playing soccer with the kids and all that, just like a budget or a price per square foot to do it right. What's your take on when people ask you that question to say, how do I budget to put this proper space like we talked at the beginning?
Yeah, absolutely. So if we look at a 300 square foot space, that 15 by 20, you're going to be in that $150 to $175 per square foot. That's usually what it equates down to. You can slim that down a little bit, depending upon if you don't want all the features or all the bells and whistles. But generally speaking, that's what someone should budget for a system like ours. So and that puts you in that, was that 45,000 to 47,000 range installed, somewhere right around there. And then there's other systems that are going to be $65,000. You should never pay $100,000 for a golf simulator. It's all smoke and mirrors, so you shouldn't spend that kind of money on a setup. But, you know, really in that 45 to, with some other companies, you know, like for example with TrackMan, you're going to spend closer to 60 or 65,000, but the launch monitor alone is, you know, 21 to 25,000 of that setup.
Well, we'll make sure to put links to get a hold of you and in the show notes of how people can reach out to so much expertise on the team. And I'm sure you guys could kind of help them if they have plans and saying, okay, we're based it on these principles from this podcast to kind of say what is the right one for there. You have a team to kind of help them with that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we got a number of professionals on our team that, you know, we dig into the space analysis to make sure we can assist along the way. You know, ideally, you know, we enter into the either pre-construction or before walls get sealed up. You definitely want to consult with your simulator professional to make sure all those pre-installed deliverables are in the proper places before things get sealed up. It just gets a lot more expensive to reopen walls.
Love it. Well, as we close this thing out, I'm excited to ask this question that we always ask to all the wonderful guests, and thank you for coming in and sharing your story. What is your crystal ball for the future, and will add golf technology in construction?
Yeah, I think the crystal ball in the future for indoor golf, I would love to see the USGA to start recognizing indoor golf. Mm. So when I play 9 holes or 18 holes of golf indoors, that we can post scores and start to develop, allow our handicap to keep going through the off season. So like in Michigan here, we're going to stop posting scores November 1st. I think it's November 1 to April 1. So technically in Michigan, we can't post a score. But there's players like myself, we're playing virtual golf at a competitive level week in, week out. They're smart enough to develop a system to make that happen. I think once that happens, that then allows the indoor golf environment to have more legitimate competitions with handicaps and really elevate the indoor golf sport. So it's not just outdoor, it's also indoor competition like some of the other professional sports that are out there.
Yeah, well said. I think about like the TGL that I see is coming back, and all, you know, the investments into the more just like the party and the showcase of the off season. Mm-hmm. But I love your perspective on, you know, what is a real golf and what is not. At the end of the day, it's all ball striking and learning how to do it better every day, and using tools and technology now is can really make it real. That's fascinating. The last question we always ask, Aaron, what is that one thing you want to leave our builders and affiliates to think about when they go out there to crush it and grow their business?
I think for any of the builders, if they're trying to add value to any of their projects in dollar per square foot, adding in golf simulation is a home run. I know the home gyms have been popular forever. The theater room's been popular forever. But incorporating the golf simulator space really takes that luxury home to the next level.
Couldn't agree more. Honored to know you, and thanks for sharing your story, Aaron.
Absolutely. So great to be on.